What up, mother fixers and sister fixers? This is Fix PMS, where the real talk gets real. And Sabrina's not here today, so she can't say that part with me. Minggu ini Sabrina lumayan sibuk karena dia ulang tahun. So if you have not yet, please wish the girl happy birthday. This is a girl who is always young at heart, and this week she is taking it all in. So kemarin gue ngobrol sama Sabrina kayak, okay, yuk, what else can we do for this week if you don't got the time? So I thought it'd be kind of cool to read you guys something that I thought was pretty meaningful to me. Again, I don't want to sound conceited. Tapi karena kemarin gue baru baca buku ini dan baru selesai bukunya, dan gue suka banget penulisnya, gue ngerasa kayak, okay, shit, I feel like maybe this is a good thing for me to share with you guys, and, you know, take this opportunity to just kind of fill in the episode, karena gue sama Sabrina gak bisa bareng buat episode ini. This basically is from a writer and a podcaster, and actually one of my favorite podcasts. I literally listen to it almost anytime there's a new episode. Ini udah setahun lebih sih gue udah dengerin podcast ini, dan gue suka banget sama penulisnya, yang the woman who made the podcast as well. Her name is Elizabeth Day, and she has a podcast called How to Fail. And basically, How to Fail is about the failures in life. And I don't know, I think the reason that I feel it's such a meaningful podcast, karena dia emang ngomongin sesuatu yang mungkin orang lain tuh nggak mau ngomongin gitu, ngerti nggak lo? Kayak, it just, people always want to talk about the things that they succeed in, which are, you know, getting married, or getting that really, really good job, or having a kid, and all the things that you succeed in because this is what society expects you to succeed in. But she basically comes on and interviews people who talk about their failures. But these are really famous people, right? So you only think about these people in a sense that ya orang-orang ini emang terkenal, jadi mereka tuh emang udah, ya udah jadi gitu loh, kayak they don't even have failures. But really, they talk about all the failures that you don't think that they've had. And to think that people who have really succeeded have also actually been through a shit ton of failures is really, I want to say, I don't want to say awakening, tapi kayak lu juga kayak, oh, orang ini juga manusia gitu loh, dan kita sama-sama manusia. We just have to realize that actually the failures are what make us, or rather that the failures are just as important. Kayak sama-sama penting kok dengan all of your successes and everything that you wish to achieve. But the failures are the things that kind of make you learn and grow, and, you know, because once you fail at something, you can try again and you probably will succeed. So, anyway, if anybody wants to check out the podcast, it's called How to Fail. And actually, she has already written a first book, but this is her second book, which is called Failosophy. And it talks about the 7 steps of failure and how these 7 steps of failure can be applied to many things in life. And whenever you're feeling a little bit bummed out about yourself, you can kind of apply this to that. And the book is really, really short. So kalau misalnya emang kalian pengen baca buku ini atau pengen dengerin audiobooknya, you should look for it, because I highly recommend it because it's so short. You don't even have to spend that much time. Bukan yang kayak like ratusan pages and shit. It's pretty short. I actually don't know how short it is. It's, oh, just kidding. It's 145 pages, but the main steps are within the first 100. And sebenarnya hari ini gue nggak akan baca full bukunya karena emang itu kepanjangan, dan I don't think it's fair. If you want to read it, you should find the book. But this is something that we wanted to recommend to you guys if you feel a little bit like, I don't know, you're not really worth much, or that you feel like what you're doing is not meaningful, or, you know, you didn't reach the goal that you wanted to at the age that you wanted to. I feel like this book really speaks to a lot of people in that way. But one of the steps that I wanted to read today is, I think, something that you can apply at any point in your life, di umur berapa aja, dan gimana ya? I think if you read through it, I feel like it can really reach out to people at different stages of their life. And I think that's how you can apply something so easily. Like, something so simple can make so much sense. By the way, I've had a glass of wine. So if I sound a little bit drunk, I'm not drunk. I'm just tipsy. But anyway, I'm going to get on with it. So this is from Elizabeth Day's Failosophy. This is her 7 failure principles, step number 6. Kalau misalnya emang lo mau baca semuanya, please, 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 I really do recommend looking for it, because it is worth it, and it's a super short read, so it won't take up too much of your time. Gua baca buku ini di dalam 2 hari, dan itu karena emang gua lagi kerja juga. So if you really sat down and read through this book, you would be able to read through it pretty quickly. So yeah, okay. So step number 6 of Elizabeth Day's philosophy is, there is no such thing as a future you. I used to be someone with a 5-year plan. My plan would be a thing of infinite and varied detail and beauty. I would know where I would be living, what job I'd be pursuing, who I'd be dating, and the precise brand of coffee I would drink every morning before going to work. There was only one problem. The plan never worked. As much as I like to imagine myself into the future, I never entirely could. By the time I got to that projected 5-year point, I was never quite the person I had thought I would be. I would be living in a different country. I'd be dating someone unsuitable. I'd have given up drinking coffee altogether. After a while, I realized that instead of reassuring me and giving me clear strategic focus, my 5-year plans were actually making me feel like a failure for not living up to my own expectations. I was setting my standards far too high and was inevitably disappointed when I didn't achieve them in the allotted and arbitrary time span I had chosen. As we have already learned, overblown expectation is the thief of happiness. If we expect too much of ourselves, we are destined to feel like failures. It's partly why I don't like New Year's resolutions. We live in a culture that celebrates impossible imperfection. We are repeatedly fed that lie, that aspiration and ambition can only ever be grounded in our lust for unobtainable things. New cars, new clothes, new homes, new selves. When in fact, we can motivate ourselves in a different way. By seeking to find contentment in the expression of our truest selves as we already are. We can be happy by learning to live with and even honoring our imperfections. They do not always need eradicating. We do not need to buy something to make them disappear. The falsehood that we must constantly be on a quest to perfect ourselves is pervasive. It encourages us to think of the end of the year as a time of reassessment. On the 31st of December, we are bloated from a festive season of excess, exhausted, and emotional effort of processing the intensity of the preceding 12 months. And our natural inclination is to want better. We imagine ourselves emerging, transformed, resplendent, into the new year. Shops are selling self-help guides by the dozen, each one promising a new way of constructing a new you. Sunday newspaper supplements proselytize revolutionary detox plans that promise younger skin, glossier hair, and a renewed sense of vigor. The Christmas food leftovers have been replaced by juice cleanses and celery sticks. Everyone seems to take up running. Into this febrile atmosphere, we unleash the beast of our own self-hatred. We decide to make New Year's resolutions. It's an admirable concept, but by now we feel so hidebound with shame and internalized criticism that the only resolutions worth making seem to be so overly dramatic ones. So we resolved to run marathons, even though we don't much like running, and still have that one dodgy ankle from the time we fell over drunk during Freshers' Week. We decide to become vegan, even though we really, really like cheese. We set ourselves the task of learning new languages or instruments or life drawing techniques because we have suddenly realized there is no more time to waste. And because when the clock strikes midnight and it's the 1st of January, we will be better versions of ourselves, thinking more clearly and with oodles more disposable time in our diaries. Well, that's the theory anyway. Of course, it never turns out like that. After a few weeks, the new running shoes lie untouched by the front door, haunting us with their unspoken judgment as we recover from that torn hamstring. The Italian lessons never work out because we just can't seem to find the time to memorize the necessary vocabulary lists. The vegan diet contains a lot of tofu, which turns out to be more expensive than we thought. And so on. We made ourselves look like failures in our mind's eye, simply because the original plan was faulty. In the rush to achieve illusory perfection, we have ignored our own limitations and tried to do too much. But what if we were to readjust the expectation and tell ourselves that, instead of running a marathon, we would commit to going for a jog when we felt like it? What if instead of planning for a future version of ourselves that doesn't exist, you pay attention to the present you, the one who does exist? The American author Kristen Ropian talked to me about this when I interviewed her for a live recording of the podcast. We had just chatted about how difficult it can be to navigate your 20s, so I asked her what her 30s were proving to be like. "They've been really good," she replied. It was funny because I was so scared of them. In some ways, it was one of the things that made my 20s hard. I had this timeline that I had imagined for myself that had set points. I think that's super common to the point where it's a cliche, where you're like, I want these things by this year, and if I don't get them, I don't even know, it's too terrible to think about. I'll just be a failure for the rest of my life. And what happened was I got into my 30s, and I had the deadlines I had set for myself just flying away left and right. One of the specific things Ropian had imagined for herself was that she would have a child by the age of 32 and would be happily married to a man living in their own home. By the time she got to 32, Ropian had realized that not only did I not have a child, but I realized that I don't want one. I had imagined a 32-year-old version of me who would only be happy with a husband and a baby and a house. And I worked really hard to get things in order for that future self because I thought she would hate me if I didn't get there. I remember feeling when a relationship would end or something would go wrong, I'd be like, oh man, you're going to look back at this when you're 32 and you're going to be like, 24-year-old Kristen, why didn't you take that job? I just imagined this total meanie looking back and shaking her finger. And then I turned 32 and I was still myself and I didn't want any of the things that I imagined this rando was going to want. I wanted the same things I had wanted before and I could get them and that was amazing. That story sort of fell away. It became really clear that I thought I wanted a lot of things I didn't actually want, and I had just been telling myself all these stories about what would make future me happy, to the point where I was ignoring what present Kristen actually wanted, and in fact, could have. I told her that that was the best description of my own psyche that I had ever heard. Plus, it was interesting that although the projected 32-year-old Kristen thought that she would have a baby and a husband, it turned out that by the time she got to that age, she had a girlfriend and an unbelievable career instead. When I asked whether she still imagined a future self, Ropian replied that she did, but in a subtly altered way. It just feels like I'm imagining myself in the future in the way that I just didn't before. I don't know why, I just invented this other person to try and please for no reason. I don't know necessarily what I want next year, but I feel like, okay, I know what I want right now, and I can sort of extrapolate that. I can make a reasonable guess, and that seems fine. It's so different. What I found so compelling about the way Ropian explained this state of mind was that the future Kristen she had imagined bore very little connection to the Kristen that she actually was. There were the goals that society had told her she wanted, rather than the things that felt congruent with her true self. For me, that is the crucial difference. I'm not saying that you should never think about the future, rather that your thoughts about the present should be realistically grounded in the present. putting aside money for pension, for instance, is a sensible thing to do because you can take action towards it as your present self. Setting yourself the goal of being a yacht-owning billionaire by the time you're 65 and fixating on this to the extent that you're making yourself feel anxious right now because you're not earning enough money to make this a reality is a pointless exercise. The pension is a less sexy vision than the yacht, I admit, but it's a calmer one too. The joy of this way of living is that it leaves you space to follow your own passions and instincts when they arise, rather than being constricted by a series of time-sensitive goals you think you have to achieve by a specific point. I probably would have never launched the podcast or written this book or learned all these fascinating stuff about failure had I been sticking conscientiously to the original 5-year plan of writing novels, getting and staying married, buying a house and raising children. The fact that my marriage ended, that I was unable to conceive, and that I did not have a deposit for a house meant that I was able to pursue different things that I thought I might like in the moment. Decamping to Los Angeles and living in an Airbnb for 3 months, for instance. Although the uncertainty felt scary at the time, it also felt liberating. My life felt fluid rather than rigid. Ultimately, these decisions changed the course of my life for the better. Those 3 months in LA taught me an enormous amount. They made me realize that it was never too late to do something different. Like Kristen Ropian, I've come to believe that there is no such thing as a future me. There is the me that I am right now, and I need to pay attention to her. That's not to say forward planning is pointless, but unless you can actively contribute something practical towards your future growth right now, there's no point in worrying about the things you can't control yet. You'll deal with your 5-year future self when you get to meet him or her. The great possibility of the future lies in one simple fact.